Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset, and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is a round two podcast with Orla O'Flaherty. So Orla was on a few months ago in episode 320, where we talked about cortisol, estrogen, female fat loss, the pill, managing underactive and overactive thyroid. And today's episode, we are doing a bit more of a deep dive into the most popular topics on or from that podcast. For those of you who don't know, Orla is one of my closest friends. She is one of my five people. And today's episode, we do a deep dive into things like thyroid and tips for self-care, PMS, how to minimize the negative symptoms, and educating men on the compassion needed around it. Amenorrhea, losing your period, so who's at risk and why does it happen? And things like fertility and your pre-pregnancy prep. So a very female-specific episode today, although I think a lot of guys will get benefit from it as well in terms of the educational side about, you know, how thyroid function works, how PMS works. Definitely if you're in a relationship or have a girlfriend or a wife who struggles each month during their cycle. And yeah, just lots of different things on today's episode, a deep dive with Orla, who is an expert in her field. So without further ado, here is today's episode of the podcast, Orla O'Flaherty, Thyroid, PMS, and Fertility. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today for a round two episode, a largely requested round two episode with Orla O'Flaherty. Orla is a herbalist, naturopath, and nutritionist who specializes in female health. In episode 320, Orla talked about cortisol, estrogen, female fat loss, the contraceptive pill, and managing an underactive or overactive thyroid. Today's podcast, we're going to do a little bit of a deeper dive on the topic of thyroid, PMS, fertility, and amenorrhea, so losing your period for those unfamiliar with the term, amongst other things. Orla, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me back.
We are doing this one virtually. We did our first one one-to-one, and the idea today was I have a new podcast studio set up, and we were supposed to test the sound quality for the new podcast studio, but that hasn't gone to fruition as planned. So we're doing this as normal, virtually in my house, in your house, through Skype. So thank you very much for coming on again. Again, we had such amazing feedback from the first episode and so many different topics that we can cover today. But before we go into that, how was the feedback from the first episode on your side?
Oh my God. I wasn't expecting so many messages to come in, and it was mind-blowing and humbling and really heartwarming as well. So many women got in touch with me with their stories of their fertility journeys, their gynecological problems, their life stories. And it was, one, amazing to see and amazing to be able to connect with these women, but two, even more eye-opening on the vast scale of what issues women have to go through on a daily basis. So yeah, it was absolutely phenomenal.
We are going to touch on a lot of different topics today, from thyroid, PMS, fertility, amongst other things that are kind of, for those unfamiliar or who haven't listened to the first episode, Orla's one of my five people. We chat nearly every day, either through the gym or through DM or through WhatsApp, and we have our weekly walk. So we're in regular contact. So I've made a couple of personal note conversations that we may come back to later on in the podcast on things like freezer books and, you know, being empathetic but taking no shit, two things that I've learned from you in terms of terminology and mantras to adopt. But I want to stay on the body to get us kicked off today. But instead of going into straight to thyroid, which is what was the original plan, this may be the same in terms of feedback that came back from you, but I want to kind of pitch it at, what was the most common topic that people messaged you about? Because I had my feedback when I asked and called to action at the end of the episode about, well, what else would you like us to talk about? And it was thyroid, it was PMS, it was amenorrhea, it was fertility. But from your side, Orla, what was the kind of the biggest topic that people were coming into your DMs with at the back of the last podcast?
100%, it was a combination of thyroid and fertility. And then there were a lot of questions around the pill again, just because the pill, there can be so many questions, but definitely thyroid and the fertility, just because they're both journeys. They're real journeys into the self and into your health, and then looking at your lifestyle and everything around.
Right, let's park on thyroid. So, and give us a little bit of a wider perspective. We touched on this in the first episode about underactive and overactive thyroid, but we definitely didn't go deep in it. Explain what are some of the main issues that you see with people when it comes to thyroid function and kind of the main pain points that people have, because I know there's a lot of people listening who struggle with both genders, but I know it's largely a female issue in terms of my experience with people I've worked with, definitely. But what are some of the main pain points when it comes to thyroid issues, and take a kind of a wide step back on that, and then we can kind of pick out different areas of that as we go along.
Yeah, so when it comes to thyroid, we're looking at two aspects of it. We're looking at hypothyroidism heading into what's known as Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune condition related to thyroid, and then we're looking at hyperthyroid, which can also lead into another autoimmune condition known as Graves' disease. So when we're looking at thyroid function, well, when you're looking at what the thyroid does, it controls your metabolism, and it also controls a lot of your other hormones, be it your reproductive hormones, your stress hormones, etc. They're all within that loop of, I remember in the last episode I went deep talking about the HPA and HPG axis. So that's your hypothalamus, your pituitary, and your adrenal glands or your gonads, so your ovaries or testes. But the thyroid is looped in there with the hypothalamus. So when we're looking at thyroid function, really, people will start feeling a certain way. Now, the most common one is hypothyroidism or Hashimoto's. And like 1 in 5 women will present with thyroid conditions. And even 50% of thyroid problems go undiagnosed for years. And when it's going undiagnosed for years, that's when it's having that compound effect, and before you know it, you've really crashed, or else you've really gone over or heading into what's known as a thyroid storm if you're a hyperactive thyroid. But what we're looking at symptom-wise, kind of signs and symptoms for especially hypo, is the likes of sluggishness, really bad concentration, really bad memory, that kind of chronic low-grade depression, not so much that you're gone into the likes of the suicidal thoughts or anything, but it's just that low-grade feeling of lowness. And then the likes of thinning hair, being like really, really sensitive to the cold and having really cold hands and feet, low body temperature, cramps, muscle cramps, low sex drive, and that hanging on to that excess weight. So when we're looking at that, we're looking at, why is this happening? It's what I always say when anyone comes into my clinic, or now with the pandemic, it's all been over Zoom or Skype. And my first question is, why? Okay, why is this happening? What's going on with you, the person? Because as a naturopath and a herbalist, we treat the person, not the condition, because everybody's constitution is different and everybody's going to react differently to their own chemical makeup, as well as the chemical makeup of the likes of our food and our environment. So I have to ask why, because I have to get to the root of the cause, or to the root of the problem. Why is it happening, instead of, right, this is happening, here's the medication that's going to treat the symptoms, we want to fix it. With thyroid, there's a huge link to gut, to your gut health and gut permeability. So especially when we're looking at the extreme cases of hypo and hyper, so the likes of the Hashimoto's or the Graves, we have to look at the gut. 70% of our immune system is created within the gut. When we have what's known as gut permeability, I know you've heard of leaky gut before. Not everyone has, but leaky gut is where there's little pockets within the small intestine where toxins are being released back out into the bloodstream, and the body is then having an immune response. So it starts attacking, say, a pathogen or a toxin that's harmful for the body. So the body's then creating antibodies. So it's fighting itself. And then that's having a roundabout loop effect of creating even more inflammation and more of an immune response. So looking at gut health and then the likes of your inflammation, thyroid really is an inflammatory condition. Anything that's autoimmune is inherently inflammatory. So we have to look at reducing inflammation, reducing the amount of toxins that are that we're being exposed to, be it from the likes of heavy metal toxicity, from the likes of even our tap water has high levels of mercury, aluminium and fluoride in it. So we really need to be looking at that and the quality of our water. But then when we're looking at buying bottled water, we're looking at the BPAs and the phthalates, which are within the plastics there, which is also having a toxic effect on our system. Then we have to look at the likes of an overgrowth in bacteria in the gut. Is there an overgrowth of bacteria? Is there an overgrowth of candida? Is there an overgrowth of yeast that's throwing off the good gut balance? And then we're also looking at mineral deficiencies, because when it comes to thyroid, there has to be a reason for what's throwing everything out. And a lot of the time, it can be down to mineral deficiencies. So really repairing the likes of your good gut health with your mineral deficiencies, because if you don't have good gut health, you're not absorbing your nutrients from your food. So we've all often heard the saying, you are what you eat. Well, you're not. You are what you absorb. So if you have gut permeability, you're not getting the minerals that are needed for proper thyroid function. And these minerals, the likes of your vitamin D, your selenium, vitamin A, zinc, like your omega-3 fatty acids, and then iodine. Iodine is so important when it comes to thyroid. But the thing is with iodine, it's not just with iodine, I suppose, it's with everything. It's balance. So if you don't have enough iodine in your diet, your thyroid function isn't going to be optimum. But then if you have too much iodine in your diet, that can actually kill your thyroid. So it can completely crash it. So what we're looking at, say for people who have hyperthyroidism and who are heading into Graves, a lot of those people can go through a treatment known as iodine treatment, but it basically just kills your thyroid. So then you're going straight into Hashimoto's afterwards. So it's going from one extreme to the other and having to support the system then once it crashes into that Hashimoto's state. And when we're looking at iodine, when we're looking at all vitamins and minerals, like we can get them from our food, but as well, it's looking at the root cause, which is the gut, the excess toxins, the stress as well, because stress is one of the key ingredients for thyroid dysfunction as well. So it's those three areas together. And then also looking at the liver, like is your liver able to metabolize all the toxins, the heavy metals, the excess stress hormones in the body? And then how are your bowels? Are your bowels able to excrete them? So it's a holistic area that we're looking at, really. And when you're going to the doctor to get tested for your thyroid, the range for thyroid testing is, say, the normal range is 0.5 to 5. And that range is actually really wide. So when you are getting your thyroid checked, initially, the doctors are only testing your TSH, so your thyroid stimulating hormone. And if that comes back within that normal range, they don't test for anything else. Whereas there are other factors involved as well, which is the likes of the thyroid antibodies. So you really need to be checking for the thyroid antibodies as well, because the TSH may be within that normal range, but there's still something off. So you're on that cusp. Like even the American College of Endocrinologists, they say that even 3.2 within that normal range is too high for your TSH levels. So when your TSH levels are really high, that means that your T3, which is one of the main thyroid hormones, is too low. So it's that negative feedback loop. It's your T3 is too low, so the body keeps producing TSH all the time. When that's happening, that's when it's just getting lower and lower and lower. And then we'll medicate. But then we're not looking at the underlying cause, which predominantly can be the likes of autoimmune, gut permeability, excess toxins, all those different factors. I know I've gone on a massive rant there. I'm sorry.
Not at all. It gives me perfect segues into what I want to talk on, because when I think of what you do, it's very much the case of, you know, getting to the root problem. I always, the analogy we use or the metaphor we've used regularly is, you know, you can't paint a dead leaf green and then say that it's alive. And mm-hmm. sometimes medication, and this isn't an anti-Western medication.
No, not at all.
You know, we're both of us are big pro Western medication for what it's for, but symptomatic treatment on certain things may not always be the best approach. I'm actually curious, because Orla, I don't know the answer to this, because we've never talked about this in, you know, personal or private conversation, but when somebody comes to you with a thyroid issue off the back of, say, having gotten their testing with their medical practitioner and then getting a medication, do you work with them in with their medication and then try and potentially take wean them off it? Do you keep it on it? Do you work? And I suppose the question I'm asking, because I don't know the answer to this, is what you do and how you work with people diametrically opposed to potentially some of the medication they would be on, or do you work within it so that they stay on it for as long as they need, potentially come off it if they don't, you know, if they don't need it any longer? Or what's your general approach when somebody comes to you off the back of having worked with, you know, a traditional Western medicine where they've been on their, you know, T3, or they've been on whatever medication they've been given? What approach would you normally take with that, just out of curiosity? I know it's person dependent and there's such a wide spectrum of lifestyle and history based on the person, but generally would you find that you work with it and then adjust it with the person, or is it something that you're not a massive fan of in terms of, I know we've talked about the contraceptive pill, that you're not a huge fan in terms of what it does to female bodies, etc., but what's your approach when it comes to thyroid medication and the way you work with people?
To be honest, it's the same with all medication for me, as in that it's not that I'm opposed to medication. I'm not at all. And definitely, I know me and the pill, people hate me. It's like when someone comes to me and they're on, be it thyroid medication or the pill, I will work with them for their needs. So when they come to me, say someone's after coming from the doctor, they've been medicated for hypo or hyperthyroidism, and I have had clients come and say, I don't want to be on this medication. And my response is, I understand that. I completely get where you're coming from. But there's always going to be a big but. When it comes to your thyroid, we need to keep you on the medication until we can balance out the hormones naturally. So how we work it then is with under supervision. Like, some people do want to come off their medication, and at the end of the day, body autonomy, that is their choice. But it needs to be done in the safest way possible. And if it can't be done, we can still work together to support the system, to support optimum function and reduce any sort of side effects from the meds. But with thyroid meds, if someone is weaning off them, it has to be done under supervision of their doctor and with a healthcare practitioner, be it myself or someone else. And we're looking again at the holistic approach. We're looking at the foods, we're looking at the mineral deficiencies, we're looking at how we can improve overall gut health and liver detoxification, all the pathways of elimination, really. But then staying in touch with your doctor, getting your bloods done regularly, seeing if there's changes. And if there are improvements, then looking at possibly weaning the meds down and then increasing the likes of your vitamin and mineral supplementation. Again, when it comes to vitamins and minerals, it's not something that I recommend everyone do. But when you have a health condition, your body's not absorbing them. So we do need to go in with supplementation. But yeah, it is completely working in conjunction. Like, I'm all for like the allopathic medicine, working with holistic medicine. It's all complementary. If we can come at it from both angles, you're giving yourself that best outcome instead of just going one way or the other. But one thing I would always say is never, never, never come off your meds cold turkey, because I've even had people get on to me who were wanted to come off their meds cold turkey and go straight into a holistic approach. And I'm like, no, you can't do that. You can send yourself into a thyroid storm, which a thyroid storm can then send you into a coma. And at the end of that can be death. Like, your thyroid is that important. And you can't go messing around with it. You can't kind of be guessing with it. You have to really do it under the supervision of your doctor, your GP, as well as a healthcare practitioner.
I think that's great advice for people, Orla. You mentioned there as well, gut health and vitamin and mineral supplementation based on obviously the individual, because you're not going to be absorbing it. But when it comes to, say, self-care for thyroid, what are some of the kind of best bang for your buck tips that you offer people or tell people to consider?
So first things first, because a lot of the time it is that we're looking at the gut health. So we need to look at fixing the gut. What I always recommend anyone who has gut problems is for the first few months, usually I cycle supplements on every 6 to 8 weeks. I cycle them on and off, but it would be a good probiotic. Now, there's loads of different probiotics out there on the market. And for anyone who doesn't have massive gut issues, or so someone who doesn't have an autoimmune condition, or someone who doesn't have IBS or IBD or anything like that, I'd be saying, you know, the likes of your Udo Super 8s. I love them. I think they're brilliant. And then the likes of their digestive enzymes as well. But for someone who has an autoimmune condition and who has that leaky gut, the gut permeability, we really need to go something a bit more heavy duty. The likes of the Nature's Plus GI Complex. Between Brexit and global pandemic, it's really hard to get some of their products over here at the moment. But the Nature's Plus one is one I would definitely recommend. It contains your probiotics, your full spectrum probiotic, good bacteria, and it also contains glutathione and glucosamine, and there's a couple of other things, as well as some ginger extract and a small bit of whey. Now, whey protein in very, very small amounts is actually really good for healing gut mucosal, but just not in massive portions. So always looking at the gut first, a good probiotic, a good digestive enzyme, the digestive enzyme to make sure that you are actually absorbing the nutrients from the food. And then we're looking at the vitamins and minerals that are most important for thyroid function is your selenium, your vitamin A, your zinc, and your omega-3 fatty acids. Now, you can get these through your food, but in the first few months, you really do need to be supplementing, because if there's an issue with the gut, you're not absorbing them. So, but even still, incorporating foods rich in those into your diet. So the likes of selenium, the easiest thing, Brazil nuts, having 1 to 2 Brazil nuts a day, you're getting the amount of selenium that you need. Then your vitamin D. Vitamin D is really important, sun exposure. Now, I'm all for protecting your skin from UV rays. Sun damage is so dangerous, but going outside for 10 minutes, just exposing your skin, especially here in Ireland, because we're also, well, not all of us are that pale. The likes of myself, who's that pale. 10 minutes in the sun without sunblock, you're going to be getting your vitamin D. That's in the summer months. From October to March in Ireland, we don't actually absorb the vitamin D from the sun. Then your vitamin A, so the likes of your organ meats, and then your zinc, so the likes of beef, oysters, poultry, nuts and seeds, and then your omega-3 fatty acids, so good quality seafood. Again, I know we talked on this in the last podcast and I got a lot of hate for it, but your salmon, making sure that it's wild.
The hate was from me, just to clarify. It wasn't from anybody else. That was directly from me for you attacking my favorite food.
Sorry about that. But just making sure that your salmon is wild, and other oily fish as well, that likes a pollock and mackerel and all that. Like, we're blessed on the west coast of Ireland with your mackerel. So yeah, having a full range of foods in your diet. One thing I always see as well is the likes of with any thyroid condition, people are terrified of the brassica family because they contain what's known as goitrogens. Well, goitrogen is an inflamed thyroid and it's swelling around it. And I
what
have
was that? What was the word you said? The brassica family.
Yeah, the brassica family. So the likes of your broccoli, your kale, your sprouts, all those. So anyone with thyroid condition has this fear of the brassica family because of the known goitrogens, but it's only when those foods are consumed raw in high doses that there's going to be a goitrogenic effect. Once you cook them, you're actually killing off a lot of those goitrogenic properties that are within the food. So still incorporate your brassicas in, because we need the brassicas for our liver detoxification. Unfortunately, with the health food movement and a lot of people drinking so much kale juice, like gallons of it a day, and I'm like, no, just a little small glass will do. But even still, if you are someone with a thyroid problem, I would be leaning towards cooking your brassica family, but not avoiding it altogether either.
I love it. There's so much there. I have this episode's going out on Monday. We're recording it on, what day is it? Tuesday. It's going out in a few days. And I've got the podcast I'm recording this evening is with the guy who created Udo's Choice. So I've got Udo Erasmus. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that conversation. It'll be out the week after this one, so Monday week.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that one too. Hell, I do love Udo's.
Oh, same. We're both the exact same. Like, they're probiotic, and I use their digestive enzymes as well off the back of your recommendation. But I'm really looking forward to chatting to him too and talking kind of more on the gut side and kind of where all that came from, because he's got a very interesting backstory. So yeah, for everyone listening, stay tuned for that. That'll be out next week. Orla, I want to dive into PMS, because one of the other topics that came back, and we've covered a lot on thyroid there, and I know that it's so context dependent on the person, your approach and what you take towards people, that the herbs, the nutritional aspect, the lifestyle element, it's very much specific to the person. But I'm glad that we got to talk on some of the tips for self-care that people can consider or look into. And I recommend anyone that has issues with thyroid, like, talk to Orla. Like, when people come to me for my programs, it's a brilliant fit for some people, but if somebody says, look, I've got a serious underlying issue with thyroid, I'm like, go to Orla. I'm like, this is the person that you need to work with. But another thing that came back that I mentioned was PMS, managing that. And for those that struggle with it, can you explain, Orla, because there's definitely going to be a percentage of males listening to this podcast, probably mostly females based on the topics we're covering, but can you explain what PMS is, and then some of the negative associations or effects that people have, females obviously have, when it comes to, I won't say it's condition, would condition be the correct term? I'm not sure, but if you can explore that for us.
Yeah, so it's a syndrome, so it's premenstrual syndrome. And there's many variations of it. So there's your regular PMS, which is premenstrual syndrome, and it can go up as far as something that's called PMDD. And PMDD is premenstrual dysphoric disorder. So it's an even more extreme version of PMS. Now, PMS is an imbalance in your hormones. And when we're looking at our hormones, we're looking at predominantly your estrogen, your progesterone, but we're also looking at your testosterone and then your stress hormones, your cortisol. I know we went into that a bit more in depth in the first podcast. But when it comes to PMS, it's excess estrogen. Now, the thing is with that, there can be two causes of excess estrogen. The first cause is either one, you're not ovulating to produce progesterone. And when you're not producing progesterone, your estrogen is going to stay quite high. Or else two, you are ovulating, but your body isn't eliminating enough of the estrogen that's already circulating throughout the system. So when we're looking at progesterone, progesterone is actually a natural antidepressant. So when we're coming up to our periods, so like that week before your period, you're getting the likes of your bloating, your sore, swollen boobs, your kind of headachy, low mood, irritability, poor sleep, just not feeling yourself and not feeling your best. You were looking at, there's too much estrogen floating through the system right now. How can we help this? Now, in that moment, say that week, if you catch yourself that week before your period in that low mood, when you're like, oh God, I'm PMS-y. The thing is, for a lot of us, and a lot of women will relate to this, is we don't realize that we're PMS-y until our periods come, and all of a sudden this veil is lifted and we're like, oh my God.
Can you please, and sorry, I hate bringing this up on the podcast because this is probably something that wasn't meant for the podcast, but can you know the story I'm going to tell. Can you please say it? Because I think for every guy that's listening, every girl that's listening, I think it sums it up. You don't have to specifically go into names, but I think you know what I'm talking about here.
I know what you're talking about.
Just because I think that story sums it up nicely.
If you won't mind, but no, even for me, because I have an estrogenic condition known as endometriosis, my estrogen is always way too high. So if I'm not on top of it, I can get, I am ratty. And there are times when, now this is going back a few years when it was really bad, but I didn't realize how bad I was. So I was going around my house like a dog, thinking everyone else was the problem. They're all assholes. They're all just being so annoying today, blah, blah, blah. And then within a matter of 10 minutes, I went upstairs and my period had literally just started, and I was like, I was due my period, I forgot about that. Then came back downstairs, my brother-in-law was sitting there, looked over at me, and he was like, did you just get your period? And I was like, oh my God, how do you know, is it on me? And he was like, no, because you're happy again. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was like, I love you really. It's not my fault. It's my hormones. But yeah, it's like it's that massive surge of the estrogen and when the progesterone isn't there to counteract it, that we just become different people. And like that, it's not until that bleed starts and you get that, oh, I'm me, I'm not insane, I'm not crazy, that then we realize, oh shit, that was PMS. So, and we forget it every month. not everyone and not all the time.
A useful one for guys, just to, because I think this is very, because we've had several conversations on this, Orla, yeah. And you know, I've talked with my partner as well, because she's very self-aware around this in terms of when she's feeling a little bit of extra sensitivity around, you know, the week before. But for guys who work out, especially who are listening to this podcast, or for girls who want to use this reference for their boyfriends or husbands, it's yeah. like when you haven't trained, or when you haven't worked out in like a week, 10 days, and then you go in and get that massive flood where you're like, yeah. oh, this is amazing. Or another analogy I've used is like when you've gone months without sex and then you have sex as a guy, it's like, oh, Jesus. It's the only analogy, because I could never get the, I was like, how the fuck, what's going on with your body? I'm like, how is that happening? But then it was explained to me that way. I'm like, oh, okay. I was like, I'm going to share that with people so that so that guys can be a little bit more aware and maybe a little bit less, your body, female hormones. I just wanted to add that.
Oh, no. And that's actually brilliant. I've never heard it being described that way as in the gym, which makes complete sense to me personally right now, because I haven't had the gym for the last 5.5 months. Last week, they opened back up. You saw me after 3 days and it was like I was a different person. I was like, oh, I'm me again, I'm Orla again. It's that flood of the good hormones, the happy hormones. That's exactly what it's like when we're PMS-y. So when we're PMS-y, it's before our period. So it's something that really annoys me when lads, like my brother does it all the time. He's not going to be listening to this, so I can say it. But he'll be like, are you on your period? Or the term that I actually hate the most is, are you on the rag? And
I'm
like, I hate
that term.
I hate it. It's disgusting. And I'm like, can you not just say the word period without even cringing? And oh, God, I could go on a period rant right now. But anyway, but it's like when men's, not just men, some women do it too, but predominantly men. And it's because they don't understand. And that's, I think, when we don't understand something, we kind of not put a negative connotation on it. It's just we don't understand it. But when they're like, oh, are you on the rag? Or are you on your period? And it's like, no, actually, I'm PMS-y. So this is what's going on with my hormones right now. My estrogen is up here. My progesterone is too low. I can't control this. I can't help it. Can you please have a little bit of compassion instead of being like, oh my God, you're on your period? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
100%. And I think one of the reasons that I wanted to talk about it, and we've talked about it on the podcast previously, is to educate everybody on it. I think most females know, or for those that don't know, they at least have an idea because they're experiencing it themselves. But for me, like, because it's just approaching with compassion. Like it's the same. This is going to sound like a really terrible comparison, but for someone that has like mental health issues, I'm like, it's compassion is the way that you handle that. Yes. And I think that it's a version, because like I feel for my partner, I feel for females every month, that I'm like, there's a few days every month where you're just low. And I'm like, that's really hard. And I think as a guy, because we don't get those ebbs and flows generally, you know, unless we're suffering from other issues, it's being aware of that. And I think being a little bit compassionate towards it, because it goes away. Like that's the, like it's a short term thing that you can't help. And I think the awareness and the education around that at least arms some people with the tools to potentially apply compassion where it needs to be, you know, applied.
100%. Because for me, like I have this bee in my bonnet to educate as many people, men included, men actually particularly, around the likes of periods, just trying to open up the conversation and take the taboo away from it. Because as women, it is part of our lives from the age, for me, I was 9 and when I got mine first, but for anywhere from 9 right up until your mid-50s, your period is part of your life every single month. And it's such a not talked about topic, because there's still a connotation around it being dirty, around it being unclean, And it even goes back to the Bible. Like there's a passage in the Bible saying that if a man lays with a woman during her bleed, he is no longer clean and he needs to be washed of his sin. And so this is where it all comes from. And then that's just been passed down generationally. And what that is doing to our girls. So the way I see it is, like, I have two nieces and I love them dearly. And myself and my sister, we will celebrate, not celebrate our periods, but we talk about them openly with the girls. So they are 6 and 3, nearly 7 and 4. And they know what your period is. They know, we call it our moon time. So they're like, no, Auntie Orla's on her moon time, whatever. I'm like, don't jump on my tummy, leave me alone. But their father is open to talking about periods as well. Because when you look at little girls and they're not allowed to talk about something that's going to be part of their life going forward. I've had people tell me that my periods are, that, oh my God, you're disgusting because you have your period. I had one guy nearly vomiting out the side of a car when I told him I had my period and I explained to him what a period was. And I was like, okay.
Just for context, you were like 17 or 18 when this happened, wasn't it?
No, I was older. I was 20.
Yeah, I remember you telling me. Yeah.
And like having, at 20, I could manage it. But at a young age, not being allowed to talk about your periods with the main male figures in your life is a complete rejection of who you are as a person, as a whole, as a woman, now as a little girl. But that gets carried forward for the rest of your life, then, that there's something wrong with me because I'm bleeding. That main male figure in my life thinks I'm disgusting for having a normal natural cycle. And it can actually be really scarring for women. And that's why a lot of the times what we're seeing with women, it's they dread their periods, they hate their periods, because there's this negative connotation around it, instead of actually celebrating it sometimes and it being part of who you are. And when we have our periods, we're at our most creative. Like, when you think about your period is there for a reason. It's you haven't conceived, so the body is shedding the endometrium wall, but our wombs are there to conceive and to create life. I suppose that's the woo-woo in me, but it's something for me that I feel like it should be celebrated. I know it's not nice and PMS is shit and all that, but it is part of 50% of the population for their lives, you know? So if we can open up that dialogue, I think it's really important.
Yeah, and I'm very grateful for it, as, you know, a father of a 6-year-old girl. Yeah, like, yeah. It's kind of the self-education on this side that you're prepared for when that happens and when that occurs. I asked a similar question earlier with thyroid about, like, tips for self-care on thyroid. Yeah. When it comes to PMS, and you've, again, given me a fountain of information on this, because I've applied it with my own clients. I've, you know, I told my partner, I've told anyone that would listen that struggles or is giving out about, you know, PMS or their symptoms at the time. What are some of the best practices when it comes to self-care in terms of supplements, nutrition, just lifestyle in general? What would you offer to most people who struggle with that? Because I know it's really bad for some females. It ranges on the scale of, you know, mild to, you know, full-blown no energy or bloating or just really, really moody. I've talked about this in a previous podcast with Maeve Madden as well. And what are some of the best practices that you offer to people when it comes to potentially minimizing the negative effects of PMS?
So first things first is we need to look at why there's the excess estrogen floating through the body. Again, is it the progesterone? Yes, it is the progesterone, but is it that you're not ovulating, or is it you've just too much exposure to excess estrogens? I know we talked on that in the first episode. So then looking at your liver function. So your liver is what metabolizes excess hormones within the body, and then it's your bowels that excrete them. So you poop out the excess stuff. So making sure that your liver pathways and your bowels and your gut are healthy. Again, going back to the brassica family, is one of the main foods for your liver detoxification pathways. And then making sure that you have enough fiber to grab onto the excess hormones and toxins, and they're being pulled out and flushed out via your poop. And so looking at your food that way, you don't have to be eating salads every single day. It's incorporating in a little portion of broccoli every day, a little portion of kale every day, making sure you're having your root veggies. So your sweet potato, carrots, parsnips, beetroot, potato, if you can tolerate potato or white potato. And then looking at supplements. Now, when we're looking at PMS, there's a direct link in with the gut and gut permeability, because a lot of women who have been on the pill, there was a study done, and it was like 70,000 women who were on the pill, and the percentage was up, it was like 70-something% who ended up developing IBS symptoms and IBD symptoms, because the synthetic estrogen in the pills causes gut permeability. And not all women, but like the majority of women have been on hormonal contraception at some stage or another in their life. So making sure that your gut health is on point. So getting a good probiotic, again, either the Udo's or the Nature's Way. And then your other vitamins and minerals, your methylated B complex, because we need our B vitamins, or B6 or B12 and or B9 for proper hormone function and production. Then we need again, omega-3 essential fatty acids. Like our hormones are produced in the brain, in the glands in the brain, the hypothalamus and the pituitary. Our brain is the fattiest tissue of the body. We need to nourish our brains with healthy fats. And then as well, zinc. What research has discovered is that we need zinc for proper ovulatory function as well. For men, it's the precursor for the testosterone production. So your main three ones, especially if you are on the pill or have been on the pill, is looking at a good probiotic, your omega-3 essential fatty acids, and your zinc and your methylated B complex. But always making sure that you're getting these supplements from a good quality company. Don't be buying your supplements from the supermarket, because those supplements, they have a lot of fillers in them and actually a lot of heavy metals in them as well. So you're not actually getting anything from them. So make sure that you're getting them from reputable companies. For me, I like Udo's, I love BioCare and Terra Nova and Nature's Plus. I find they're the best ones.
Yeah, I'm very much on the same side when it comes to supplementation, particularly health ones, that, you know, either pay the price for the high quality ones or don't use any. Like, you know, using low quality ones can potentially do more harm than good. You know, worst case scenario, it's a waste of money. Or best case scenario, it's a waste of money. Worst case scenario, it causes more issues than the actual...
causes more problems, exactly.
Yeah, so I think looking at that and being aware for people, because sometimes it's very tempting to be like, oh, I see an omega-3, I'll take that. It's there beside my, you know, Wrigley's chewing gum, or it's there beside the Mars bar. You're like, right, maybe don't pick your supplements that way. Exactly. Let's flip the script, Orla, on the opposite side when it comes. We touched on PMS there, but anamenorrhea, so losing period. Can you explain to people what would cause this, and maybe some examples of people you've worked with in the past who are high risk of this happening? Because I think it ties in nicely with the PMS we've talked about and potentially the fertility we're going to talk about next. But can you explain anamenorrhea and explore that a little bit for us?
Yeah, so amenorrhea is the loss of your period for longer than 3 months, or for longer than 3 cycles. And amenorrhea, there's different causes for amenorrhea. So there's hypothalamic amenorrhea, and then there's also post-pill amenorrhea, which does link in with hypothalamic amenorrhea. But then what we seem to find is that there can be sometimes a misdiagnosis between either having HA or else having PCOS. So it's about getting the right blood test done to make sure that I've lost my periods. Is it hypothalamic amenorrhea or is it PCOS? I've actually had a couple of clients come to me who thought that they were perimenopausal, and because they'd lost their periods, they came off the pill and their periods were gone, and they would have been 39, 40, and I was like, no, I actually think this is post-pill amenorrhea. So we got the blood test done and we looked at what was going on with their guts and what was going on with their HPA and HPG axis. And thankfully, touch wood, we worked really hard together and we got them back. But it's the most common form of amenorrhea in younger women is the likes of the overtraining, undereating, that hypothalamic amenorrhea. And it's, again, we have to look at that HPA versus HPG axis. So your hypothalamus, pituitary, and your adrenal gland axis, that's your stress response. And then your HPG axis, your hypothalamic, pituitary, and gonadal axis, that's your reproductive hormone response. when we are the likes of overtraining and undereating, you see it predominantly in athletics, so gymnasts and long distance runners, endurance athletes. We see it a bit in weightlifting, but not so much.
Competitive bikini athletes more so than...
Bikini athletes, yes. But the likes of powerlifting, not really. Sometimes in CrossFit, but the competitive bikini athletes, yes, I've seen a lot of that myself. Not in myself, but with clients. And there's different things that we can do. And the main thing is that, say for the, like, if it's happening for athletes, we need to get to a point where they're ready to make the physical changes of the overtraining, because it's no matter what you do, no matter what foods we give, no matter what herbs we give, we're not eliminating the main cause of it, which is excess cortisol. Because it's the excess cortisol that is switching off your ovulatory function, because it's gone into that fight or flight mode and the body is saying, sorry, no, I can't procreate right now. It is not safe to do so. So to be able to switch back on ovulation, we need to eliminate the stressor, the main cause of it. And that can be hard. And I know myself, as someone who does powerlifting, or well, did powerlifting, but someone who goes to the gym every day, I'm like, if telling me to stop training, I'll go insane. So it's finding the balance. Instead of stopping training altogether, like slowly reducing the intensity and slowly reducing or swapping over the type of training that you're doing. The likes of HIIT, it can be great for some people, but for someone who has hypothalamic amenorrhea, you're just causing that surge of cortisol again. So if we can swap the HIIT over to LISS instead, if we can start looking at the calories, again, like I've had clients and they've given me their calorie counts and I'm like, yeah, technically you're within the calories that you need to maintain, but you're completely over-exercising. You're doing 3-4 sessions a day. So like your expenditure, it's not matching up with the amount of food that you are actually consuming, so, or the amount of calories that you are consuming. So it's finding that balancing act. But it can be done, and without having to give up everything that you love. It may just be a bit of a slower process. And a lot of the time it's really looking internally and looking at the psychological element of why is it that you can't make those changes. But then as well, looking at there can be psychological elements with it, looking at the likes of fertility and all that, but that's a whole other rabbit hole that if I go down, we could be here for hours.
Yeah, we could. And I think maybe around three we'll touch on that, because definitely something you said to me before, for previous, I think people that have listened to the podcast in a linear order, I had your podcast, I had an episode with Paul Scanlon, you know, talking about things like, you know, dealing with internal anger, where you turn your anger inwards, you know, and some of the good issues that come with that. And one of the questions you put to me, which was a little bit of a punch in the face, metaphorically, was asking me about, you know, dealing with anger. And a very different, you know, I'm not an angry person in the sense that I don't project it outwards, but I will turn it inwards, and which can be very beneficial at times, and has been when I've been, you know, running through the Arctic or running through the Sahara or doing, you know, physical tasks, preparing for bodybuilding shows, etc. But you asked me, you know, what would your life be like if you took away your training? And I was like, oh, fuck. And it made me really anxious, made me think about
your face, really, away.
Yeah, my face. You saw my face at the time. I was like, I was like, I couldn't do that. I was like, I actually feel a bit sick if you told me that you would take away my training from me, because it's my outlet. And that made me turn inwards and ask, okay, well, if I'm using training, even though it's a very beneficial thing for health, for fitness, etc., but if I'm using it as a crutch to potentially not look at other issues that are out there, it's very similar to the anamenorrhea. And somebody, well, why do you feel the need that you need to train 3-4 hours a day? You know, what's going on? What are you avoiding? Or what's going on? What are you masking? What are you numbing? And again, these are questions I've asked myself. Again, not projecting my stuff onto other people, but they're good questions, because I've worked with girls in the past who are like, well, I haven't had a period in, you know, months. I was like, you know, that's not the way your body's supposed to be. They're like, oh, it doesn't matter. You know, I like training. And I'm like, okay. I was like, I get that. But, you know, and then you dig deeper into the conversation. I think it's just bringing it back. And if you want to make that choice and make that trade-off, by all means, and if you don't want to turn it inward and look inwards, it's totally fine. It's not what you do, it's why you do it. But it is worth realizing that it's not the natural state for a female body to be in, where cortisol is so high that you lose your cycle every month. So I think I just wanted to kind of touch on that for people, as somebody that's worked with a lot of people over the years, particularly when I used to prepare people for competitions back in the day. Haven't done that in a long time, but it was conversations that I would have regularly for those who need it. It's something that's food for thought. For those who don't, you can disregard it completely. But Orla, I wanted to touch on one final topic, because we've touched on amenorrhea, we've touched on PMS, we've touched on thyroid and fertility, which was something that I know you do a lot of work with. It's something you're very passionate about personally, and you cover it on your channels, on your podcast. But off the back of the last episode, this was an area that I didn't expect to come my way that did, from both genders, funnily enough, from females who struggled with fertility and males who were struggling with their partner, their wife, their girlfriend to conceive, who messaged me after the podcast because it had a very hopeful feel because of the stories you told. But when it comes to fertility, let's explore that a little bit more than we did last time, and we'll finish on that topic, and then everything else we touched on, you know, we're definitely going to cover back in round three and do a little bit more of a just spit it and do a mindset episode on, you know, things that have helped us with our own personal lives, etc. But when it comes to fertility, what was the feedback and what were the kind of messages you were getting off the back of the last episode?
Oh, I got so many, and I'm going to be honest with you, Brian, I bawled my eyes out crying. And I was kind of cursing you because I was like, I'm too emotional for this right now. But I was so grateful for the messages that came in. There were so many women and like you said, and men, because it's the one thing I always say when it comes to fertility is that it's not just the woman's journey. It's the couple's journey. And the partner is just as much involved as the woman trying to conceive. So having people message with their stories and wondering, are there ways to get through things and what can we do? And as well, realizing that like there are other options out there. Like so many people have gone through countless rounds, like even up as far as 5 rounds of IVF and nothing is happening, and or else it is happening and then they miss. And it is heartbreaking. But there are other things, and it's just that it's not really talked about mainstream about what it is that you can do to help yourself. So when we're looking at fertility, looking at both men and women, we have to look again at the cause. So one thing there's a few things. First things first is your doctor won't send you for any investigations until you've been trying for a year. And you know that for a lot of women, especially nowadays, we're tending to looking to conceive a little bit later in life. So that 1 year is actually it can feel like a long time in say like your biological clock. But even though in saying that, it's the biological clock isn't as short as what they used to say it is. But looking at the causes of it, is the cause coming from the female? Is the cause coming from the male? With fertility cases, 40% of infertility is actually caused from the male, but the woman is always tested first and goes through very invasive, vigorous testing. And that can go on for like 6 months before the male is even tested. So if I have couples who come to me, the first thing I will ask is, have you both been tested? And if the answer is no, I will say, okay, I want your partner to be tested. Especially if this is a case where there's no underlying health condition, the likes of endometriosis, PCOS, fibroids, anything like that. If there's no underlying cause, no obvious underlying cause, I want the man to be tested as well, because there could be something as simple as low sperm mobility. Now, not that it's simple, but if we can get an answer for it, then we can help.
It's feedback. It gives you data that you can use to potentially solve the problem.
Exactly. So even the likes of your low sperm mobility, your sperm antibodies, which is becoming more and more common, again, looking at autoimmune, like going back to the autoimmune again, like a lot of men who say would play contact sports in their younger years, if they had any sort of blunt testicular trauma, then the body can start producing antibodies against sperm. And then if you are in a chronic stress, if you're in chronic stress or your gut health isn't up to scratch, if you're having an immune response, those antibodies are just, they're going to increase. So looking at the likes of that, again, your gut health. Then looking at the likes of mumps, like did you have mumps when you were younger? So if you can find the cause, then we can get a little pathway through. And then for women, is it PCOS? Is it endometriosis? Is it emotional trauma? A lot of the time there can be an emotional block when it comes to fertility. So then the steps that you can take on that journey, like there's a few steps. First off, you're trying for, if, like I said, if you're someone who doesn't have any obvious underlying health conditions, have your partner be tested. But then if you are as well someone who had irregular periods before ever going on the pill, I would ask your doctor to get you some investigations before that year, because there may have been an issue pre-pill that has just reared its ugly head now post-pill. And so we need to address that issue. So get the test done before the 1 year mark. Then when you are planning, again, we talked about it in the first podcast, a lot of people, they don't know when they ovulate. And it's like when you said the best thing ever, I laughed so hard. It was hunt the bear in the spring. Like you got to know when you're ovulating. And if you don't, you could be missing that window. So like you're not obvious, not every woman ovulates on day 14. You can ovulate earlier or you can ovulate later. So finding your key spot and then knowing when to actually try conceiving, because once the egg has been released, it's not viable for, or it's only viable for 12 to 48 hours after the egg has been released. After that, it's like your no-go zone. If you're having sex, you're having sex just for fun.
Which isn't a bad thing either.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. I'm not a believer in sex. It's just for procreation. It's for a whole host of things. But then looking at the likes of your pregnancy prep. So something I do with women in clinic, I call it the pregnancy prep. Minimum 4 months of getting your body ready for a pregnancy. Because, again, the world that we live in, a lot of inflammation, a lot of external toxins, that rat race life, the excess cortisol, if there's no like obvious underlying health condition, like we just need to look at these areas and try and get them under control. So looking at, again, your gut health, looking at inflammation, looking at what it is that you're putting into your body. Like it takes 4 months to create healthy follicles and healthy sperm. So say if you're someone who is looking to conceive, are you taking the right steps as in like food wise? Are you eating whole nutrient rich foods? Are you drinking alcohol every day? If you are, could you maybe cut that back to like the weekends? Because I know with the way the pandemic has gone, unfortunately, there is a huge increase in alcohol consumption. But then looking at as well caffeine, so any more than 30 milligrams of caffeine is actually really detrimental for the reproductive system when it comes to inflammation. So making sure that you're having less than 30 milligrams of caffeine a day. I know a lot of people hate me for that. I'm sorry. Swap over to chicory root. It tastes just the same, just without the hit. Then looking at your exercise, going, doing the likes of gentle exercise, trying to eliminate hit as best as you can. As again, we need to strip out that cortisol. Like I said earlier, when that cortisol, looking at the amenorrhea, when your cortisol levels are so high, it's switching off ovulation. A lot of the time you may not be ovulating, but you're still bleeding. So you're still getting your monthly bleed. That can happen as well. It's different for every woman. So making sure that you are keeping your stress levels as low as possible. But then coming together as a couple and really, again, supporting each other, bringing it back to compassion, because it can be a really hard, frustrating journey. And you can become really resentful of each other. And sex becomes horrible and you just don't want it. And it's more of a chore. It's very robotic. The intimacy is gone. That love and care is gone. It's more of like, we're on the clock here. I'm ovulating. You know, let's get it over and done with. Whereas when you're doing that, it's again, that in itself is causing stress. So something that I say to a lot of my clients as well, and this is when we see the best results, is stop trying. Stop trying for 3 to 4 months. Just give yourself a break from it and let yourselves come back together as a couple, reconnect as a couple, build on the intimacy, build on what it is that you actually want from each other, but from yourself, and give your body a break. But the problem with this, though, is, and it happens to everyone, when I say, you know, stop trying, they're like, okay, yeah, we're going to stop trying. But then in the back of their head, they're like, okay, we're not trying now. So maybe the stress is gone. So maybe we will actually conceive this month.
Yeah. It's the, yeah, you are trying, but you've said to yourself you're not, but you actually don't.
Yeah, you still have that hope.
Yeah. And which is effectively the exact same as actively trying.
Yeah, exactly. So when people come back to me and say that's what's after happening, I'm like, okay, I want you to stop having sex on your fertile days. So that 5 days before ovulation, that day of ovulation, no sex allowed on those days. You can have sex outside of those days, and it's purely just for intimacy, for fun, for connection, for exploration of each other and connection. But those days, those fertile days, to again eliminate that stress, that want, that 2 week wait. I talked about that in the last podcast. There's what's known as the 2 week wait, which is, yeah, it's horrible. And for people who are going through this for 6, 9, 12, 18, 24 months, it's 2 weeks out of every month. You're high stress, you're anxious, you're wondering, was it this month? Did it happen? Did it happen? Did it happen? So we need to eliminate that 2 week wait just to reduce the stress in itself. And when we do that, that's when we see the best results. So yeah, I hope that helps.
I love that. I think what you mentioned there about pre-pregnancy prep is really valuable for people. Like, most people won't rock up to a marathon without doing any preparation for it.
Yeah.
And I think applying that philosophy to pregnancy is the same, because there's so many things that are going to support that end goal that you can do on the front end. I love it. Or that, again, as I said, there was so much in response off the back of the first podcast. I know a lot of people messaged you, and you've worked with a lot of people even since then. You know,
so, and thanks for that.
Yeah, not at all. My pleasure. As Paul calls it, the Oprah effect of the podcast.
Oh my God. It was like, I couldn't believe it. Like, the phone just like went crazy, and I was like, okay, I don't know what to do with this now, but thank you.
Yeah, Business Brian was like, get a system in place, get your system in place.
Yeah.
Which is funny. But Orla, as I said, there'll be very similar responses to this episode, because we've literally taken the feedback from the first one and done a deeper dive into thyroid, PMS, and amenorrhea and fertility. I did want to touch on other things that we will save for next time. So things like freezer books, which is a term I got just because I mentioned it at the start of the podcast, I got from Orla, which is those books that you're like, oh, fuck that book. It's a bit, you know, a mirror back, and it has to make you go inside and you want to throw it in the freezer. So that's a term I got from you. But next time we will definitely touch on freezer books and being empathetic, taking no shit, and just kind of riff back and forth on some life stuff and some mindset stuff. But for everybody listening who wants to work with you or get in touch with you on a professional capacity or even follow you online, where's the best place for them to reach out to you? Is it still Instagram DM? Is it the podcast? Send people wherever you want to send them now.
Yeah, so it's still Instagram. So it's Orla_naturopath_herbalist. And also my website, which is going to be launched next week. I was talking to my web developer this morning. So that's going to be out next week. So it's orlaoflaherty.com. So it'll be, my email address will be orla@orlaoflaherty.com from next week on.
Amazing. And for everyone listening, I will put those in the show notes. And by the time this episode goes live, the website will be up within a couple of days. And if you're listening to this that week, it'll be up. So just click on through. For anyone that wants to message Orla, as I said, you're one of the people I send so many people to when my program isn't a good fit for them. And particularly those with issues like thyroid or even, you know, PMS, fertility, and amenorrhea, the things we've touched on today that are more holistic and need to be applied individual context to someone's life, you're my go-to person for that. So Orla, thank you so much for all the value you provided today and for everything that you do. As I said, I'm super grateful for our friendship, something that we will get into on the third round of the podcast, I'm sure. But thank you so much again, and looking forward to round 3.
Thanks so much for having me on, and I can't wait. And thank you as well for everything. Much appreciated.
My pleasure.
There you have it, Orla O'Flaherty on thyroid, PMS and fertility. I hope you enjoyed and learnt as much from today's podcast as I did. Orla is an absolute fountain of knowledge when it comes to the body, when it comes to everything to do with thyroid, PMS and fertility in general. So looking forward to the round three, which will be a very different episode where I've made notes of some of the conversations that we've had in the past on air and off air. So stay tuned for that. That'll be coming in the next few months. So keep me posted. How did you find today's episode? Be sure to take a screenshot of it, pop it up on your Instagram stories. You can tag me, Brian_Keen_Fitness, and you can tag Orla_Herbalist_Naturopath on Instagram. That's everything from this week's episode. Catch you all next Monday.